Hi, welcome to the Growth Thumbies summary of the book Grinding It Out by Ray Kroc. Grinding It Out shows how McDonald's grew to be one of the biggest companies in the world. Ray Kroc did it through seizing the right opportunity, perfecting the fundamentals of the business, always emphasizing growth, and persisting until he found the successful strategy. And our top quote from this book is, "As long as you're green, you're growing. As soon as you're ripe, you start to rot," end quote. So who was Ray Kroc? Well, he was an entrepreneur who spread McDonald's restaurants all over the world. If you've ever enjoyed a Big Mac or Happy Meal when you were a child or even now, then you can thank Ray Kroc for that. And in this book, he tells the story of his life, from his early jobs as a salesman to his eventual role as the McDonald's CEO. Today, it feels like most super successful business founders that we hear about are very young, like Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, who became a billionaire in his 20s. But that wasn't Ray Kroc's story. In fact, he only started franchising McDonald's in his 50s. And that really shows that you're never too old to chase a dream. So now let's jump into the best lessons from Grinding It Out, starting with number one, explore many types of work, especially when you're young. While growing up in a small city near Chicago, Ray Kroc worked whenever he could. As a boy, he opened a lemonade stand, which was reasonably profitable for a kid, I guess. He also worked at the grocery store and his uncle's drugstore. And with that money, he opened a very small music store with two friends. But they didn't sell enough sheet music and small instruments, which is what they had, so they had to close at the end of a summer. World War I came, and Kroc lied about his age to sign up as a Red Cross ambulance driver. But in the end, the war was over before Kroc could be shipped overseas, which I guess was lucky. Interesting side note, one of the boys he trained with for that role was actually Walt Disney. So anyway, after that, his parents wanted him to go back to school, but he didn't feel that school was a good fit for him, so instead he began selling ribbon novelties, which are little decorations that can be sewn on clothes and fabric. So he would set up sample areas in hotels and selling these items to women who were passing through. And throughout his life, music was important to Kroc. When he was growing up, he learned to play the piano very well, and he had a natural talent for it, and his mother made him practice for long hours. I think she was a music teacher, if I remember correctly, or a tutor. So the next summer, Kroc got a job playing piano at a dancing hall at the edge of a lake. And there he met Ethel Fleming, who became his first wife a little later on. In fact, she was working at her parents' hotel across the lake, and she would often come to visit where Ray Kroc played music. So after that summer, Kroc had another job for a short time, marking up blackboards for a financial firm near the American Stock Exchange. But what he really wanted to do was to go back to Chicago to marry Ethel, but his father said that he would have to have a real and a substantial job before he could get married. So Kroc became a salesman for the Lily Tulip Cup Company, and then he got married. I think today many teenagers are expected to already know exactly what career they want to do for the rest of their lives, and before they've really tried any type of work. So Ray Kroc instinctively knew that he should try many different types of jobs to find out what he liked doing, what he was good at, and what he could get paid well for. And in the end, that happened to be sales. In summary of this first lesson, from a young age, Kroc was ambitious, opening a lemonade stand and even a tiny music store. He never felt like school suited him, and he preferred to make a living in various ways, from selling novelties to playing piano, so don't be afraid to experiment in your own career, especially in the beginning. So now we have lesson two. Learning new skills can help your future success, no matter your current job. In 1922, Ray Kroc began selling paper cups for the Lily Tulip Cup Company. Kroc's job was to convince store operators of the advantages of paper cups, because back then most restaurants used only glass cups. Kroc worked crazy long hours. He sold paper cups from early morning until 5 p.m., and then he played piano at a radio station from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m., with a two-hour break in the middle there. And then the next morning, he would wake up and do it all over again. At least he did have Sundays off of selling cups, and eventually he had Saturday nights off his radio job too. So that became the big night out with his wife Ethel. Well, after a couple of years, his sales began increasing because he became better at selling. And here are some of the most important things that he learned. Number one, be direct. If he saw his prospect start fidgeting in their chair, then he would cut to the point and ask for the sale. Kroc says most salespeople don't know when is the right time to stop, and they go on for too long. Number two, customize your pitch to every client. Here's a quote, "No self-respecting baseball pitcher throws the same way to every batter, and no self-respecting salesman makes the same pitch to every client." End quote. And that was a quote from the book. Number three, show, don't tell. Demonstrations can be more powerful than any sales promises you can make. For example, when Kroc was selling cups for milkshakes, he would go to the restaurant and order 10 milkshakes. Well, after a few minutes, Kroc would pour all the extra melted residue from those metal cups all into one cup. You know, from 10 cups to one cup, and he would demonstrate that there was enough extra ice cream and milk in those cups to make one additional milkshake. And then he would explain that the store owner could save all that wasted product by using his paper cups and mixing the milkshakes inside his paper cups with a special metal collar attached to the top of them. Okay, number four sales tip, he found that one big client could be worth 100 small ones. You see, over time, Kroc learned that his time was better spent selling to very large companies rather than chasing tons of small individual stores and food carts. For example, in 1930, the Walgreens Drug Company began buying paper cups from him. Landing Walgreens as a client wasn't easy, but here's how Kroc pulled it off. First, he went to the Walgreens store beside their headquarters, and that store owner, well, in the beginning, he refused to consider using paper cups. He said they were too expensive. Well, using glass cups is cheaper because you can wash and reuse them. So Kroc offered the owner 300 paper cups for free to try them out. And after a few days, the owner saw that the paper cups brought in a lot more takeout customers, which more than made up for the slightly higher costs of using the paper cups. So he was won over. And after that, Kroc went to the Walgreens management office next door, and he told them about this experiment in the one store. And the management was convinced, so they ordered paper cups for the rest of their stores. Well, at that time, Walgreens was expanding rapidly, and each new Walgreens store meant a lot more sales for Ray Kroc and more money for his employer, the Lily Tulip Cup Company. Kroc worked there for a total of 17 years, and he eventually became the best salesman in the company, and he even had about 15 other salesmen working under him. Those sales skills would prove very useful for him in the next chapter of his life. Much, much later in the book, Kroc talks about how he would negotiate with McDonald's suppliers to get the best prices for buns, meat, ketchup, etc. He says all those years of experience selling things to businesses from the other side made all the difference in his success. Here's another quote. "I was an overnight success, all right, but 30 years is a long, long night." End quote. So, in summary, selling paper cups for 17 years sharpened Kroc's sales and business skills, which would later be key to McDonald's success. He learned to be direct, asking for the sale, to customize his sales pitch for each prospect, to use demonstrations, and go after bigger clients. And now lesson three. You can always switch directions if you're willing to persevere. So in the 1920s, ice cream had become massively popular, largely as a result of the alcohol prohibition. Even bars and hotel lounges had switched to selling ice cream. Well, a local businessman was setting up ice cream parlors under the name Prince Castle all over the state, and the stores looked like little castles on the outside. So Ray Kroc convinced him to start selling milkshakes too, and because of that, in that first year, Kroc sold him over 5 million paper cups to put those milkshakes in. And that guy, Earl Prince, who was one of the owners of Prince Castle, he invented a new type of milkshake mixer that had a more durable industrial motor, and it could mix six drinks at a time. He called this the multi-mixer. Well, eventually, Earl Prince proposed that Ray Kroc become the salesperson and distributor for the multi-mixer. Kroc loved that idea because his instincts told him there was a lot of future potential in this machine. However, his wife was totally against the idea. She felt Kroc was risking their whole future, and he was too old to start over again. And later, she refused to help him out in the new office when he couldn't afford to hire staff, and this was the beginning of a big rift between them. So, at the age of 35, Kroc started basically a new career. He went to sell multi-mixers to restaurant owners all over the nation, and he believed they would be eager to buy this revolutionary new machine, but he soon found out his expectations were totally wrong. You see, most restaurant owners preferred to have several smaller machines because if one of them broke down, they could still sell milkshakes. While if the multi-mixer broke, then they wouldn't be able to make money from milkshakes until it was fixed. So those were very challenging and stressful times. Ray Kroc went almost $100,000 in debt, which was a huge amount of money, especially in those days. Here's another quote. I learned then how to keep problems from crushing me. I refused to worry about more than one thing at a time, and I would not let useless fretting about a problem, no matter how important, keep me from sleeping. End quote. By the way, there's another famous entrepreneur named Phil Knight who talked about being overwhelmed with the demands of starting a business. He pushed through his own stress and challenges by saying to himself that life is growth. You grow or you die. You see, as a college graduate, Phil Knight had started a shoe company based on a crazy idea of his, as he called it. That company eventually grew to be Nike. You've probably heard of it. It's the biggest sports clothing business in the world. So if you want to learn how he did it and how Nike grew, then check out our summary of his autobiography, Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. You can find that at growth.me. So anyway, in those multi-mixer days, he hired a young woman named June Martino as a bookkeeper. She had no training as a bookkeeper, but Kroc sensed she had integrity and a problem-solving personality. And in those days, he could only afford to pay her a low salary, but he promised she could have a great future in the company. And indeed, 20 years later, she would become one of the top executives at McDonald's. So Kroc would travel to all the restaurant and dairy association conventions around the country. He always sent a dozen samples of the multi-mixer machines ahead of him, and then he would sell them out at the shows. He was working as fast as he could, and after some years, he landed some big clients like Dairy Queen and Tasty Freeze. And eventually, he was selling up to 5,000 units a year of this machine. Yet, after 15 years of selling multi-mixers, Kroc didn't like how the market trends were going. So it was the mid-1950s at that point, and he knew that he would have to find a new product soon. So, in summary, at 35 years old, Kroc started a totally new career, selling and distributing a new type of milkshake mixing machine. At first, he went deeply in debt and found it very difficult to make sales. But over time, this business did grow to be selling up to 5,000 machines per year. And now we have lesson four. Don't hesitate to seize opportunity like when Kroc saw the first McDonald's. So the McDonald brothers had come to California in the 1920s. First they did some manual labor work in a movie studio, then they opened up an unsuccessful movie theater. Finally they scraped together enough money to open a drive-in restaurant, and a few years later this restaurant was getting a lot of customers but making very little profit. So they decided a drive-in restaurant was the wrong business model, and in 1948, the McDonald brothers totally redesigned their restaurant. The menu was simplified to only a handful of items, including hamburgers, cheeseburgers, fries, soda, and milkshakes. And most importantly, the food was made on an assembly line, with each worker responsible for a small step in the process. The brothers called this their speedy service system. At the time, it was a revolutionary idea, but it worked. The new McDonald's restaurants served high-quality hamburgers faster and cheaper than any other restaurant, and because of that, customers were soon coming in very large numbers. And then Ray Kroc showed up. You see, the brothers had bought 8 multi-mixers from his company for that one single restaurant, which was more than he'd ever heard of before. Most restaurants could only use one of these machines. So out of a deep curiosity, Kroc just had to see why were they selling so many milkshakes in this store. And when he arrived in San Bernardino, California, he was soon amazed at the never-ending stream of customers that came to the store for their 15-cent hamburgers, fries, and milkshakes. So he went and he talked to these brothers, Mac and Dick McDonald, who gave him a tour of the kitchen. And there he was even more impressed by their clean and efficient operation. So at the end, he asked them why they didn't open a series of these stores. And they said that, well, they had enough money, they were enjoying their lives now, and they didn't want any more problems. So spontaneously, Ray Kroc offered to franchise the McDonald's stores himself. In fact, at that moment, he was mostly thinking about the extra money he could make selling milkshake machines if there were a lot more of these stores around. And from the very beginning, the McDonald brothers and Kroc had a great friendly rapport. So before he left San Bernardino on that first visit, Kroc had a contract signed that let him franchise the McDonald's stores all over the country. And they decided each new store operator that Kroc set up would pay a setup fee and then 1.9% of their sales in franchise fees, with 0.5% of that going to the McDonald's brothers. So can you imagine that? Kroc saw this very well-run restaurant and he decided that he could be the one to make it popular across the country. He already had a full-time business. He had a house, wife, and other obligations, but he felt this opportunity was too good to miss. I wonder how many of us would have that much trust in our instincts to just go for it like that. In summary of this lesson, when Kroc saw the first McDonald's restaurants, he was very impressed by its popularity and their assembly line approach to making food. On that very first visit, he signed a contract with the McDonald brothers to franchise the store all over the nation. So now we have lesson 5. Your first strategy is not always the best one. On April 15th, 1955, they opened the first franchised McDonald's store in Des Plaines, Illinois. That first store was built deliberately near Kroc's house so he could make sure it was running perfectly. And that's what he would do. He would drive to the store each morning to help them open, and then he would take the train to Chicago to start work at the multi-mixer office at 9 a.m. So he was still, he started to sell milkshakes, machines to make money. And they opened more stores, and in 1956, they opened 3 new stores in California, and then 8 more in other states. Ray Kroc says those early days were painstakingly hard work, like trying to ice skate on bare concrete. But they managed to set up new store operators one by one. Many of those early store owners were husband-wife teams, with the husband handling operations and maintenance, and the wife looking after accounting and personnel. And it was Kroc's past work from the multi-mixer sales that helped them survive while they were getting those first McDonald's stores off the ground. That sales income was paying all of his McDonald's costs in the early years, including his employees' salaries. You see, even as the number of stores grew, they were still barely scraping by because almost all of a store's profits were going to the individual store owners, many of whom were doing very well. But around this time, Ray Kroc hired another key person. Harry Sonneburn had been vice president of Tasty Freeze, a big fast food company at the time. But he quit, and he then went to Ray Kroc, and he said that he would like to work at McDonald's because it looked very promising. So then there were three people in the McDonald's office. There was Ray Kroc, June Martino, and Harry Sonneburn. Harry Sonneburn, a little later, came up with the strategy that would make their company very successful. You see, rather than simply licensing the name and the brand, he said they would get into the business of developing the restaurants themselves. And most importantly, they decided they would sublease both the land and the building to the franchise store owners. And to accomplish this, they first had to get financing through bank mortgages and then larger loans through big insurance companies. Kroc says this strategy was a turning point in their history. It was the step that made their future success possible. In fact, many business experts today says McDonald's may be better described as an innovative real estate business than a hamburger business. So it just goes to show that if what you started out doing isn't really working for you, some side project or business you're working on, well, with persistence, you may be able to figure out the right strategy with some deep thinking and testing out new things. So, in summary of this lesson, in the first years of McDonald's, they made painstaking progress finding each new store operator and making sure each store was running perfectly, but they still weren't making money. So Harry Sonneburn invented a new real estate strategy based on owning the land and building underneath the store, and that finally made them very successful. And now we have lesson six. Focus on the fundamentals of your business to beat competition. In the book, Ray Kroc says over and over again that the key to a store success is focusing on the fundamentals. He says no special smarts or talent are needed to open a McDonald's store, just the right focus and hard work. And in McDonald's, those fundamentals are quality, service, cleanliness, and value. So when Kroc was opening that first franchise store in Illinois, he actually had to spend months trying to make the fries just right, like they were in the original San Bernardino store. But no matter what he did, the fries just wouldn't taste the same. So he talked to the McDonald brothers, but they said it sounded like he was doing everything exactly right. They couldn't understand what the problem was. In the end, Kroc talked to a farming expert, and he found out the reason. You see, in California, the McDonald's brothers kept their potatoes in these double-walled wire baskets behind their restaurant before they cooked them, and that allowed air to move through the potatoes. Meanwhile, in Illinois, the potatoes were kept in the basement, and the farming expert told Kroc that air helps to make potatoes dry, and that converts the sugar inside of them into starches, and that's where the great taste of McDonald's fries came from. So Kroc's solution was to set up an electric fan to blow air through the potatoes in the basement, and he was relieved that they finally tasted the same as the original McDonald's store when he did that. So here's another quote from this book. You must perfect every fundamental of your business if you expect it to perform well, end quote. So many, many years in the future, McDonald's would switch to frozen fries, but only after Kroc was sure the taste of the fries would not be sacrificed. That move saved their stores a lot of money in shipping and labor costs. Square boxes of fries were a lot easier to ship than huge bags of potatoes, and employees in the stores no longer had to spend hours washing, peeling, and slicing the potatoes. As an added bonus, Stores were much cleaner without lots of potato peelings to get rid of. So that's another example of focusing on improving those fundamentals. By the way, the founder of Walmart, it was named Sam Walton, and he was another entrepreneur who was constantly focusing on improving the basics of his business. A top Walmart executive said that what made Sam Walton different than other people was that, quote, he got up every day bound and determined to improve something, end quote. In fact, Sam Walton would often walk around his competitors' retail stores with a little yellow notepad, taking notes on everything. He was always trying to learn new things to optimize his own business. And if you want to learn how Walmart became such a successful business, then you can also go see our summary of his autobiography called Made in America by Sam Walton. Go check it out on growth.me. Anyway, back to McDonald's. So in 1957, they opened 25 more stores, and they also hired another key person, a young man named Fred Turner, who became head of their operations. Far in the future, he would also become another CEO of McDonald's. So aside from helping set up most of the new stores, Fred Turner also refined the supplies arriving at the McDonald's stores. For example, in those days, the buns would arrive to them stuck together in clusters, and the grill person had to break them apart in the restaurant. So Fred Turner, he made their bun suppliers totally separate the buns individually, and that helped the grill person work faster in the stores. He also made the paper boxes that the buns came in thicker, and that kept the buns moist for a longer time. The paper boxes also lowered their costs because the boxes could be reused many more times. So in this way, you can see McDonald's worked closely with their suppliers to improve what was being delivered to their stores, both in cutting costs and speeding up the process. By the way, the purchasing power of large corporations like McDonald's has reshaped the entire food industry in the last 70 years. And if you want to learn about a different side of the fast food business, maybe a darker side, like how meat slaughterhouses work, then check out our summary of Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser. That's quite an interesting book too. So, in summary of this lesson, Kroc always knew that getting the basics perfected was the key to business success, and that meant making sure the fries were just right, for example, and always looking for ways to speed up service and to reduce unnecessary expenses. Now, lesson 7. Maintain control of your business whenever possible. In that original contract between Ray Kroc and the McDonald brothers, one rule was the brothers had to approve any changes made to a store's layout if it was different from the original McDonald's building, and they had to send their notice of approval by registered mail. Well, Kroc was building McDonald's restaurants in the north, where basements and furnaces were very necessary, and over the phone, the McDonald brothers told Kroc to go ahead with those changes, but they stubbornly refused to send him a letter of confirmation. And Kroc's lawyer said that put him at a legal risk, and they had some other big disagreements as well. In any case, Ray Kroc wanted to buy the brothers out of the business, so he called them up and he asked them how much they wanted. And a couple days later, they called back and they said $2.7 million, which is equivalent to about $20 million today with inflation. And that was a huge amount of money for McDonald's at the time, and Ray Kroc's usual money lenders refused to give him that much, but eventually Harry Sonneborn found a way to get the money. Well, today McDonald's is one of the largest companies, and it's true that the McDonald brothers would have had a lot more money if they still owned their part of it. However, it's also important to understand that the future growth of McDonald's was very uncertain in those days. See, many large fast food chains do go bankrupt all the time. So when the brothers asked for the price, they thought they were getting a good deal, and they probably were. And because of that, they were very well off the rest of their lives. And Ray Kroc was also glad to be finally totally in charge of McDonald's, and he was able to take it in the direction that he wanted to. But one part of that deal which made Krog, very angry with the brothers, was they initially offered their San Bernardino store as part of the deal, but in the end they decided not to sell it. Afterwards, they changed that store's name to the Big M. So Ray Kroc opened a McDonald's across the street from the Big M and ran it out of business. Well, perhaps he could be somewhat ruthless and competitive at times. So in summary, Ray Kroc bought out the McDonald brothers, their share of the business at the price they asked for. That was a huge cost at the time, but it helped him to grow the store in the direction he wanted with fewer headaches and more control. And finally, we have lesson 8. Nothing recedes like success. In 1966, they decided to take the McDonald's company public, which means offering stock shares for sale to outside investors. In the end, this was a very successful move. Their stock price quickly shot upwards, making Ray Kroc and the early employees like June Martino and Harry Sonneborn very rich. However, there was a growing gap between Ray Kroc and Harry Sonneborn in how they wanted to run the company. At that time, Sonneborn was president of McDonald's, and he was convinced the country would soon be in a recession, so he had stopped the construction of any new stores. When Kroc heard this, he was very angry, believing they should continue building whether or not a recession was coming, and they got into a very heated argument, which led to Sonneborn resigning. Well, Ray Kroc took over the role of president again for a few years until he felt the company was back on track, and then he passed the position on to Fred Turner. So at that point, McDonald's was doing great. Ray Kroc had just bought a new Rolls Royce, and he was looking into setting up some philanthropic organizations. But although McDonald's had become successful, Kroc didn't see that as a reason for him to rest. He continued to be very involved in running the company, especially in developing new menu items and in advising their biggest real estate decisions. Here's a quote from him. "Business is not like painting a picture. You can't put a final brush stroke on it and then hang it on the wall and admire it. We have a slogan posted on the walls around McDonald's headquarters that says, 'Nothing recedes like success. Don't let it happen to us or you.'" End quote. In 1968, they designed a totally new look to the McDonald's stores, going from the classic golden arches to these red roof tiles. They also noticed the public's attitude was changing and people didn't want to eat in their cars as much. So in these new stores, they put lots of indoor seatings and they built the stores much larger. They also found a lot of new winning menu items over the years, like the Filet-O-Fish, Egg McMuffins, Big Macs, and hot apple pies. In fact, some of their best new menu items were invented by individual store operators. For example, the Filet-O-Fish was created by a McDonald's operator in Cincinnati who was sick of losing all his business on Fridays to other stores that sold fish. You see, his area had a lot of Catholics who were forbidden from eating meat on Fridays. And the Egg McMuffin was invented by a store operator in Santa Barbara who let Kroc taste the sandwich on a visit. And Kroc liked it so much that within 3 years, all McDonald's stores were selling Egg McMuffins, and this whole new market of breakfast had opened up for them. So in summary, selling McDonald's stock to the public made Kroc and other early employees very rich, but Kroc didn't see that as a reason to rest. He pushed forward expanding McDonald's with new locations, new store designs, and new menu items like the Filet-O-Fish, Egg McMuffin, and Big Mac. So, in conclusion, this book was written in 1976 when McDonald's had 4,000 stores. As of 2020, they have over 36,000 stores worldwide, and Kroc was 75 when he wrote this book, and he died several years later of heart failure. Yet even in the last few years of his life, Kroc visited the San Diego office almost every day. What explains Ray Kroc's lifelong drive and work ethic? Well, he says this is his favorite quote, and I'm unsure where this quote comes from, but it's mentioned in this book. Here's a quote. "Press on. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. End quote. And by the way, if you want to create that type of mindset for yourself, then another great book for you to look at is called Think and Grow Rich. In that book, Napoleon Hill says, quote, one of the most common causes of failure is the habit of quitting when one is overtaken by temporary defeat, end quote. That book is one of the most often recommended books for people wanting to be successful, so I definitely recommend you also check out our summary of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill next. And you can find that at growth.me.